Technology, it's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun, it can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello, and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look into stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tungekar. On this week's show, we'll hear why farmers and gardeners should hold off on planting early this year. But first, Columbia has long been a hub for science and innovation in mid-Missouri. And the international scholars working with MU have contributed a lot to that distinction. But the number of international workers that MU hires has been decreasing for the past 5 years. KBIA's Sarah Radel has more.
Alexander Safronov has just renewed his visa. It's his third visa since he started working at the University of Missouri.
So I'm going to have you document that you're dropping it off. Mm-hmm. So 3-7.
Safronov says he remembers the day he got his first visa acceptance letter. He was in his apartment in Moscow.
Well, I definitely felt overwhelmed with emotions because I didn't think that it would happen. I didn't feel like I'm the best person, you know, to do that, but I wanted to try.
That was more than 5 years ago. Since then, Safronov has worked as a researcher with MU's Institute for Nano and Molecular Medicine. He researches how nanotechnology materials can improve medical care. According to Daryl West from the Brookings Institute, H-1B visas are a vital innovation tool.
It's designed to help those who have advanced degrees or specialized knowledge come to the United States so they can help companies that need that kind of expertise.
The U.S. has a cap on the number of H-1B visas it grants each year. This year, it's 65,000. That's one-third the number granted a decade ago.
So we actually should have a higher cap. We should admit more students and more employees with those high-tech skills because that's the part of the economy that's growing.
Safronov says about half of his more than 30 colleagues are not permanent U.S. residents.
We have a lot of people from Russia, people from India, from China, from other countries too.
Along with the rest of the public sector, MU doesn't have to abide by the national cap. This puts the U.S. number of H-1B visa recipients in 2011 at more than 300,000. But MU's share of that is getting smaller. The reason? Cost. David Curry is the director of MU's International Center. On any given day, international students and scholars drop in to manage business.
It would be however long.
The H-1 status is a much greater commitment on the university to sponsor and invest in a new employee.
In total, each H-1B visa costs the university more than $2,000. That's why the number of H-1B visas has decreased every year for the past 5 years. West says it'll be difficult to fill these specialized jobs with Americans. He says not enough Americans are going into the science and tech fields.
Science, technology, engineering, and math. Those traditional fields are increasingly being studied by people from outside the United States, and American students are choosing other types of fields.
We anticipate that we have to hire foreign people with visas at that time.
Kishab Gangopadhyay owns a nanotechnology business in Colombia. At his company's current size, 9 of his 10 employees are Americans, MU grads. For him, it's an issue of quantity over quality.
In highly specialized, sensitive areas, it may not be always possible to find highly qualified people easily.
Curry says that for MU, H-1B scholars are a necessity.
What is the outcome that you ultimately want? Well, you want the best research, because that best research may end up being discovering a cure. So the priority is always hiring the best talent. Then you have to deal with the secondary issues. You know, do we have the funds to go through the H-1 process?
Last year was the first time Safronov returned to Moscow since his visa was approved. He says a lot has changed since then.
from my room, I could really see a lot of the sky. And now it's not like that anymore. I only can see this huge building.
That's it. I'll initial it. Pass it on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a nice day.
Last month, Safronov extended his visa for 3 more years.
Now, when I have so much stuff going on, I mean, from science point of view, I just don't want to leave it. I want to go ahead and just do this research more and more.
Safronov doesn't know if he'll ever go back to that apartment in Moscow. But for now, he's happy to stay and continue his work. Sarah Radel, KBIA News.
With unseasonably warm temperatures this month, many farmers and gardeners might be inclined to plant early this year. But one MU professor is warning against that. Tony Lupo is the chair of the Department of Soil, Environmental, and Atmospheric Sciences at MU. He spoke to me about the risks of early planting and started by telling me about a typical season.
Around this part of the country, farmers and gardeners can plant starting in mid to late April, running into about the 1st of June, and this is especially true for longer season vegetables and things.
So why do you warn against early planting? What are some of the risks involved with that?
The risks involved in early planting are that we could get a cold spell yet, and we could get down to 32 or below that at this time of the year. You're not out of the woods from that risk till about April 10th or 14th. And the problem is that if this cold spell does come, we're not going to know it until about 2 to 3 days before it happens.
Why is it only reliable within 2 days?
Well, we're getting better at forecasting on all time scales, especially 5 to 7 days. But the biggest problem with these cold spells is the phenomenon that's going to bring it on is generally something that isn't well forecast even 2 to 3 days ahead of time. And that's a phenomenon we call blocking anticyclones. They are a huge stationary ridge in the jet stream. And what they do is they push cold air out of the Arctic and into the central United States, especially if they form in the eastern Pacific. And they form rather quickly. So that's a reason why even at 2 to 3 days, we're not going to know it until then.
How likely is one of these cold snaps?
The likelihood that we'll get one at this point, I would say, is 50-50. There's enough cold air up there right now that if we do get one of these blocking events to form, we'll get a cold spell down here. Now, how strong that cold spell is going to depend on a lot of factors. But there's still a good chance, I think, that we'll see temperatures in the mid to lower 30s yet.
That's it for this week's Under the Microscope. Thanks for listening. Just a reminder that you can listen to this and past episodes on our website, kbia.org.